World Radio. I'm your host, Brent Rutemeller, and today we got a report out of South Florida through the South Florida Sentinel that the International Swimming Hall of Fame was going to be a part of an entire aquatic complex makeover for the city of Fort Lauderdale. We thought we'd catch up with Bruce Weigo, CEO of the International Swimming Hall of Fame, to talk a little bit about this. Thanks for joining us, Bruce.
Well, thanks for having me, Brent.
Hey, so how are you guys a part of this to begin with? How does the Hall of Fame become part of this whole complex, and when did this all first start?
Well, back in the 19... the swimming in Fort Lauderdale is going back to the 1930s, when there was a swimming pool here on the East Coast that attracted college swimmers and college swim teams from all over the country. And among the ones that came down of the latter era in the 50s was Doc Councilman, who brought his teams here, and teams from Southern Cal, and the great swimmers of those eras came here. And some local business leaders and the college swim coaches who came down here every year for the Christmas holidays came together and said that there was a Cooperstown for baseball, there's a Canton for football, why not have one for swimming, and why not have it in Fort Lauderdale? And the AAU said, well, the idea of a Hall of Fame is a great idea, and let's go out and seek some bids in New York and Detroit and Chicago and I think Houston all put in bids, but the bid from Fort Lauderdale was very special and unique, and they got together with the state of Florida, the county, and the city. They filled in some land to make a peninsula of landfill on which they were going to build the first outdoor 50-meter swimming stadium on the East Coast, along with the Hall of Fame Museum, which would really be the archive and repository of swimming history dating back to the earliest days.
Well,
so that bid won, and that's how it came to the city of Fort Lauderdale.
That must
and
have been
was back in 1965.
So, okay. Sorry to keep jumping in there, but that just seems like a really big deal. Back in 1965, they had to acquire the land. Who owns the land, and is there a lease that the Hall of Fame has on the property?
Well, we sit on landfill, and it was built by the Army Corps of Engineers and deeded over to the state of Florida. And the state of Florida leased it to the city of Fort Lauderdale for 100 years for the express purpose of the Swimming Hall of Fame and a municipal swimming complex. Now, the city could only, by its charter, only lease out property for 50 years. So the Hall of Fame was given a 50-year lease, which expires in 2015, I'm sorry. And now what they're looking to do, the Hall of Fame is 44 years old. The swimming pools are in pretty bad shape. It's very difficult to keep them heated. The water leaks. The plumbing's bad. And the bleachers have to be held up by braces because they're getting ready to fall down. So rather than keep repairing, the city's decided that, well, let's look at this and see what can be done with this land, yet preserving that swimming heritage has made Fort Lauderdale the, essentially the world capital of swimming.
Well, that itself sounds like the city wants to keep the Hall of Fame there, and we've been reading reports that there's a lot of controversy back and forth. Where is the Hall of Fame going to relocate? But it sounds to me that this is a major step. What did the city do? Did they go out and request proposals to redo this whole site?
Well, the first thing to do was they wanted to get a feasibility study of what were the possibilities to use this existing land. What could they do to make this land really revive? I mean, in the early days when the Hall of Fame opened, there were, 100,000+ visitors. It was the economic engine which brought tourism to Fort Lauderdale. Well, the dynamic of that has changed now. And the museum, has gotten a little stale. It's been old, and this was one of the ideas that the leaders of the Hall of Fame before I got involved were looking to relocate it out of Fort Lauderdale because they weren't getting, at least they felt they weren't getting the support to reinvigorate the museum. I mean, it's at the back of the peninsula. Parking's a problem. There's not a lot of signage which draws attention to it. So attendance has really fallen back.
So an RFP was sent out, and then someone came in, I guess just recently, was it yesterday, that they presented a proposal to the council on what they can do with this property. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we're 100% in support of what they proposed because, we want swimmers, not just competitive swimmers, but anybody interested in swimming to come in and see the museum because we've got such an incredibly rich history of swimming. Swimming is, more than just Johnny Weissmuller and Mark Spitz and now Michael Phelps winning Olympic gold medals. Swimming is a way of life. It opens up the passport to anything aquatic. It's the healthiest and most beneficial sport, and it also is the sport that can guarantee you're not going to drown, or at least pretty much guarantee you're not going to drown.
Well, I think most of our listeners would agree with you on that point, Bruce. What did the council say to this proposal?
Well, what they came back with, and the outfit that that came back was awarded the RFP, and they came back with their feasibility study as Leisure and Recreation Concepts out of Dallas, Texas. And what they've proposed is not to have the two 50-meter pools and go after, you know, like Olympic trial-type events, but to have a 5,000-seat swimming stadium that's retractable, that also has a hydraulic pool that can come up and you can have other events there besides aquatic sports, diving well, a teaching and therapy pool, a water park, which seems to be the real combination. I mean, we want to get the public, the local community, to come in and see our facility. And right now, over the last, you know, the trend has been that we've just got competitive aquatic swimmers. And then within the museum building would also be an aquarium that would draw people in. And our view of that is that perfectly matches what we are. And it would be an aquarium, we think, different from any other aquarium because it would stress the importance of man's ability to swim and experiences in the water so that, you know, it's not just walking through an aquarium as a land person, but imagining and envisioning that you're a swimmer snorkeling, scuba diving, or whatever, exploring the oceans of the world as a swimmer.
That's
not
exciting.
Not just as a land tourist.
That's exciting. Maybe there's some person who just held their breath for 17 minutes. Maybe we could have a spot where they could just sink down and be in an aquarium for 17 minutes and people can watch and see them.
Well, you could have those type of things there, Brent. And, you know, it's, you know, whether it's, you know, places you swim with the dolphins where, you know, here the idea is to imagine that you can swim with the dolphins. And as we chart this along, I mean, people don't recognize that, you know, exploring underwater is something relatively new in the 1940s. And that swim fins were first patented in the 1930s, and goggles didn't really come into play until the 1960s. So, you know, when you look at, you know, they have rooms at aquariums where you know, they put the blue lights on and you see these fluorescent jellyfish. Well, imagine yourself being a swimmer and then seeing them actually in the water or walking through one of those glass tubes like they have at some of the aquariums, and you see the fish swimming on the left and the right of you, but not in front of behind you, but as a snorkeler or a scuba diver, you know, you can be out there in the real world. And that's what the mission of the Swimming Hall of Fame is to inspire everyone to want to be a swimmer.
Well,
and that, we think this is a perfect vehicle for helping us accomplish that mission.
Well, you certainly captured my imagination, thinking of all the different exhibits and different ways that you can bring swimming, you know, to the general public. But I think it's also important to note that, you know, the history that you have there, you've demonstrated of the success that water parks have had in the past of bringing the general public out and use that environment to then show contests and competition. And is that kind of what you're thinking too?
Well, I'll tell you, Brent, swimming became the nation's most popular sport, participant sport, in the year of 1910 to the 1950s, when every municipality had an incredible swimming pool that was not a competitive pool like we see today, but a family aquatic playground where kids and families would go spend the summers. And these things disappeared in the 50s and 60s. And I hate to say it, but it was because of integration that these great pools went out of business. And the general public, who just liked to get wet and splash around the pool, were completely alienated from swimming. And then in the 1970s, you had the rebirth of aquatic parks. The tragedy is that the aquatic parks were no longer connected with a competitive park. So the public that wasn't really enamored by competitive swimming now goes to a water park, and they really have no contact with Michael Phelps and Natalie Coughlin and the great swimmers of today, whereas in the past, these old pools would be the same pools that Johnny Weissmuller and Buster Crabbe and these guys would come and swim in and give exhibitions. So in the 1940s and 50s, some of the greatest names in Hollywood and in sports were guys that were very famous through their era of competitive swimming. Now, the water parks attract 80 million people a year in North America. And these are people that should be aware of what's happening in the competitive swimming world. So by having the water park, you get the kids that come, they have fun in the water, and then they look over into the next pool, and they're seeing competitive swimmers. And some of these kids are going to say, hey, man, that looks like fun. I want to do it. Or the divers, or the water polo players, or the synchronized swimmers. And this is what we've lost over the years. So now it's, you know, we've got families that pass down the aquatic tradition. But if you're not a competitive swimmer, you probably are not going to see these people funnel into it, particularly with the issue of diversity, where we've got 1% of competitive swimmers and probably scuba divers and snorkelers are African American. Yet at these water parks, the water parks reflect the national diversity.
You know, Bruce, your perspective is so refreshing and so needed in today. It just sounds like the Hall of Fame has come full circle, where back in 65, they were basically the part, the catalyst to swimming and the whole concept down in Fort Lauderdale. And now they seem to be, at least what you're saying, the catalyst to start bringing back those things that were successful early on. And I think it's something that we here at Swimming World will follow closely and wish you a lot of luck as this thing unfolds.
Well, Brent, one final word on that. When you go back to 65, what's really fascinating about the museum that's then that I remember, there were walls that were like aquariums. They had the giant manta rays and the motions there, and they applied that to the motion of the dolphin and the butterfly stroke. And they had the porpoises there with the dolphin undulation and the streamlining. So the original concept was really to be much broader. I mean, Jacques Cousteau was one of the original inductees into the Hall of Fame, and there was an exhibit on scuba diving and underwater swimming. And you have to remember, back in 1965, scuba diving was relatively new, and it was not a widely practiced activity. And, you know, one of the most popular shows on TV was The Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau, and people were just getting into this. And that's why the Swimming Hall of Fame Museum was so... you know, had some great exhibits about that area. And so the idea of coming back with this aquarium idea and blending that in with swimming history just makes so much sense. And we think we can reach out to the public and make everybody aware that comes through here. And the projections are 500 to 700,000 visitors a year up from, what we are now. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity for swimming and to make people, the general public, aware of the Michael Phelpses and Coghlans and Brendan Hansons and Aaron Pearsalls and Kate Ziegler and all the other great swimmers who are really, to the general public, unknown entities.
Well, it's a very important. This is a very important day and a very important beginning. Thanks for joining us, Bruce. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Brent. We hope to talk to you more.
All right. This is Brent Rutemeller with Swimming World Radio, reporting on swimming from around the world.